our industry traditionally has always been wrong when anticipating 10 years forward what the world will look like. Always. We have always been wrong.
Transportation Matters. The CEO podcast of Daimler Truck.
Welcome to a new episode of Transportation Matters. My name is Martin Daum. I'm the CEO of Daimler Truck AG. And I'm very much looking forward to today's conversation because we will discuss one of the crucial topics in the transition to a CO2-free economy. The basis for a sustainable economy and for sustainable transportation is green energy. Decarbonization can only succeed if there is green energy in sufficient quantities and at affordable prices. But building the necessary infrastructure is a huge effort. And I'm curious to hear how optimistic my guest is about this endeavor and what he thinks is needed to make it work. My guest today is Dr. Leonhard Birnbaum. He has a PhD in engineering, and since 2021, he has been the CEO of the international energy group E.ON, based in Essen, Germany. E.ON plays a key role in shaping the energy transition in Germany and Europe. Leonhard, welcome to our podcast. Great to have you.
Martin, it's a pleasure.
When I read your resume and saw that you dedicated a lot of your life to the energy industry, I started thinking that when I was young, energy stocks were considered as stocks for widows and orphans, meaning absolutely boring. You get dividend and nothing else happens. Why did you go into that sector? And that was long before any transition was on the horizon.
Maybe two answers. One is I'm an engineer, so I never looked at a stock. I looked at the assets. And the assets are actually pretty cool. So I actually started in a lignite mine in Garzweiler. That was my first touch point with the energy industry. And I loved the people. I really loved the miners. They're just great guys. And I truly enjoyed it. I loved the machinery and I was fascinated by the large scale of, because we are large scale industry. So that was the fascination, the engineer. And I never thought about the stock. I only thought about the people and the assets. And then the second reason is I was wondering, this industry is going to be deregulated. It's going to be transformed tremendously. And for young people, this is an opportunity, because if the industry is changing so much, it means that fresh minds, which, you know, have not a predetermined way of thinking, maybe have an advantage versus experienced minds. So it's a great place to be for a young person. So I said, why not the energy industry? And the result is acceptable. So,
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had my similar way into the trucking business. And today it's an absolutely exciting part because I would say we haven't seen so much change like we see now in the last couple of years and upcoming years as we ever have seen in the history of our industry. But when did it start on the energy side? I remember on the trucking side, I would say 10, 15 years ago, we are always talking of energy efficiency, less diesel. But whenever the talk comes on battery electric truck or zero emission trucks, it was always clear that is so expensive, that is so out of the use case of our customers. That will be always an exotic afterthought. That was about 15 years ago. And then I consider the dramatic pace. 10 years ago, we started with the first projects, you know, and now we are talking about completely decarbonizing. And that's only in the course of about 10 years. What was the journey in your industry? When did you see that decarbonization is an absolute necessity?
Yeah, the decarbonization maybe started really after Kyoto. And to be sincere, it really only started once we got into the emission trading scheme around 2005, was it, when we introduced the emission trading scheme. We had energy transitions before. I mean, our industry every 25 years was basically reinvented. In the 20s of the last century, we went for pulverized coal for the first time. Then after the Second World War, we really went for oil. In the 70s, after the oil crisis, we went for nuclear. At the end of the last century, we went for gas and in Germany, lignite. And then at the beginning of this century, we really started with renewables, the first seeds. But then after 2010, the renewables really kicked in. So for us, it has been a continuous journey, but the decarbonization journey with renewables and everything that goes with it, that really maybe started 2005, I would say, if I have to pick a date, 2005, when we introduced the emission trading scheme.
At what point of time became it clear for you, for your industry, that it was not only the job, if you produce 100 in energy, that you have to decarbonize 100% of your energy, but that you have to jump in for so many other industries who don't use electric energy today. So your target is not decarbonizing your 100 baseload energy, but going for 200 or 300 in energy demand in future.
I think maybe after 2015 is the answer, because to be sincere, before that, we were focused on getting power green. But the fact that whole industries are coming our way, you know, e-cars, EV cars, and that maybe even e-transport comes, which 10 years ago, we really didn't believe. Yeah, everybody told us it will be hydrogen, fuel cells, whatever. And now we're looking at e-transport also on the truck side. The fact that we have to electrify the heat, I think that came a few years after, so maybe starting 2015, but it's really sinking in into the industry in the last years. I mean, also the speed at which this is happening. And the fact that we might now talk also about electrifying industries, you know, and for example, heat up to 200 degrees with heat pumps, that is really what we are struggling with right now. Let me put it this way. Our industry traditionally has always been wrong when anticipating 10 years forward what the world will look like. Always. We have always been wrong.
And you're always looking for too less energy or thinking of too much energy?
No, we were always wrong about the mix and who is going to provide the baseload and how is the system going to look like. I mean, I told you before, in the 70s, we thought nuclear will take it all over. In the 80s, actually, the U.S. Department of Energy, you know, it was in the 70s after the oil crisis, anticipated 80% of U.S. demand will be provided by fast breeder nuclear reactors. And today we have less than 10% and certainly no fast breeders. So everything we always predicted was wrong, which is why I'm very modest. You know, like we have now many people who tell me exactly how the world will look like in 2045. Based on my experience, I'm telling them, well, you might be much, 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 much smarter than I am and my industry has been, but I just doubt it. The world will be different in 20 years.
And when you listen to any random news and you hear a new regulation that tell now that every household has to go to heat pumps, or if you hear that heavy transportation has to go from 30 to 45% ZEV percentage, what's then going through your mind? My goodness, let's just build another high power voltage line, or let's open up a new wind park in the North Sea, or what's going through your mind?
When I hear about new regulation, I'm usually wondering what is really the detail in this regulation. And I will ask first my guys who are reading it word by word, what do I need to know about it? Because the details really matter. But what strikes me is we are moving in the energy transition from a phase in which we had to focus on the supply side. It was all about adding renewables towards a phase in which the crucial bottleneck is really the infrastructure. So if I think about decarbonizing heat, yes, we will need renewable energy for that. But what really the problem will be is the infrastructure in place. If I think about e-charging, it's not so much the kilowatt hours I'm concerned, and therefore I'm not so concerned whether we will have enough wind farms and PV. What I'm concerned about is the capacity of the system that I will need to put in place. So I'm really thinking about, okay, so what does this mean for my infrastructure? Is this increasing my investment needs even more? And we can certainly talk about that then, especially for e-mobility.
And I think we have to, because I remember 5 years ago when I did a speech in Berlin, when I said, if you want to decarbonize transport, I called it the magic formula. You need products from our industry, you need cost parity, and you need the respective energy supply. And I said, and it's like a multiplication. If one of the factors is zero, the entire equation is zero, nothing is going to happen. At that time, every three of the items were zero. Meanwhile, I would say the entire industry is kicking out new products at record pace, and one is more advanced and better than the other, including really great trucks from our side. Secondly, the TCO problem, you can only solve it if you price CO2. We'll talk about hydrogen later, but let's focus at the moment solely on electric. But that means that an entire industry from zero to 100 wants your juice out of a charger, and preferably a megawatt charger, because that really kicks in the battery in 45 minutes and brings it back to full speed. Now, energy is the bottleneck. And I see that every day when I talk to customers. Yeah, the first charger is easy, 4 chargers is very difficult, 10 is impossible. What's your answer to that?
Yeah, maybe we should differentiate when we talk about EVs, you know, between cars and trucks. I think with cars we can cope with because the capacities that we need are just lower. But trucks are a challenge. Yeah, you just mentioned preferably a megawatt charger. Yeah, so let's assume we do 1 megawatt charging. And I don't know what would be a good charging station along a highway. How many charging points would you need in parallel? What would be your answer?
I would say 20, of which 10 or 15 are used always.
Let's say we need 15 megawatts of capacity. When we traditionally looked at networks, one person, one inhabitant is 1 kilowatt of grid capacity. So if I have a charging station with 15 megawatts, that's for me the equivalent of a small village with 15,000 people. These days, many people have heard about Oranienburg. No? Oranienburg is 46,000 people. They have a grid connection of actually 32 megawatts. So a city like Oranienburg, 32 megawatts, and we all have heard that this is not enough. But anyway, so if I need to build now 400 such charging stations along the German highways to have one every 60 or whatever kilometers, that for me is the equivalent of 400 times 15,000 people materializing out of nowhere, so to say, in Germany. Yeah? So you could think the population of Germany increasing by 6 million people. This is what we would look at from a grid standpoint, capacity-wise. Yeah, I cannot build a 15-megawatt connection into an existing grid without reinforcement of the grid behind. Usually, I can connect a megawatt, no problem. If it's above a megawatt to, let's say, 2.5 megawatts, I can usually connect you with minor adjustments. If I need to go to 15, I certainly need to reinforce the grid, and that means I need a run-up period. The combination of a site where you have the permitting to build a truck station plus where I have the grid readily available and I don't need to reinforce is rare. And that just means if in 2030 you want, you know, such a truck charging network, that means we really have to start now. So it's hard to do this in weeks. Yeah?
That's my consistent preaching. I said the clock is ticking. And I said that last year. And if I say this year, I said the clock is still ticking, but we are 1 year further down the road. Yeah, and we need it 2030. And because our problem is if we sell, I would say in Germany alone, 30,000, and I talk now industry-wide, because it doesn't matter which brand is selling, we sell 30,000 electric vehicles in Germany alone. And we are not talking about the traffic coming from the east or the south or the north going through Germany. We sell 30,000 vehicles in 2030, but we'll sell the next 30,000 in 2031. So then we have 60. And we sell the next 30 and so on. So we will ramp up fairly fast to a huge amount of trucks going through Germany. What is necessary to start now? Are you starting now or what are you doing and what are the measures?
Yeah, maybe first, I'm the largest, by far the largest distribution operator in Germany, especially on the high voltage line. I have by far the highest market share. So this will impact me more than anybody else in the industry. I am actually investing into the grid right now. So just again, to give some order of magnitude, when I started in 21, we had a rolling investment plan over a 5-year period of 21 billion euros in 5 years, average of 4.2 billion, but it was ramping up. Right now, after 3 years, my investment plan is 42 billion. So I have doubled the investment within 3 years, and it's still ramping up. So in the last year, it was 6.5 billion. So to get to an average of 8.4 billion, it's clear that at the back end, I'm talking about investing 9.5 billion. If I compare that with D&A, with depreciation, I'm going to invest far more than 200% of my depreciation over an extended period of time, not just for 1 year.
So much about the stock for orphans and widows.
Yeah.
This is a story for a startup growth business.
Actually, capital markets appreciate this growth story. I don't tell this just to brag with it, but just because you are asking, what are you doing? Lots of that is into the reinforcement of the grid, because what we have done over the last 10, 15 years, also driven by the regulation, is that we have used up the system reserves which we had. which brings us to the point that it's very hard to connect new capacities now. The renewables so far have just been added to the grid, and the grid was able to cope with it most of the time. And I simplify a little bit. But now the grid is at its limits, and we need to reinforce it. And this is why we are ramping it up so much. So what do we need to do on the charging side? I think three or four points. One, whoever has a fleet will need to think about charging at the starting points, because this is just, I mean, it's a necessity. We can't do this with public charging only. So if we have, for example, trucks that are used within municipal areas, they need to have charge points at their depots. Second, we need to start building up networks which are not exclusive. I mean, we don't have enough grid capacities to build exclusive charging networks. They need to be open actually to all different brands.
Absolutely, fully supported by us.
We need to make sure that we also build standards for digital communications between the grid and the vehicles, because we will certainly need to optimize the charging behavior when it comes to these high capacities to keep the system stable. Because if you're adding 100 trucks, that doesn't impact my grid. But if you're adding 60,000 trucks in 2 years, as you just said, yeah, then that has an impact on my grid operations. And then the trucks and the grid need to talk to each other. That is an additional point that we need to master now before we are running into problems.
Leonard, sorry to interrupt you, because interesting quote, you said the truck and the grid needs to talk with each other. What are they talking about?
Yeah, they are talking about what is the status of the grid. Now, we are at a certain point. Here are 15 trucks. Can they all charge at 1 megawatt? Or would they need to go to 0.8? Because for whatever reason, the sun just disappeared, yeah? And there's no wind blowing, and we have system stability issues. We need flexibility. And then the grid will ask, who can provide me flexibility? And here is a 15 megawatt. I know that this is not nice, as it's a tough discussion, but if we are really adding 60,000 trucks and all of them want to charge, you know, like during the day, because they're running hours and hours, then how is the local situation of the grid? I'm not talking about the grid in total, no? But the local situation. It might be that if we add very fast capacities, you know, it's important for us that we have this interaction, or it's a very cold day and lots of heat pumps are running. You know, the grid needs to figure out, okay, I can ramp down now the heat pumps, then they need to ramp up the heat pumps again. But so what does this do to the trucks? If we build a system that can provide infinite capacity to everybody at every point in time, so basically no flex on the demand side, then this system will be too expensive. Customers will not be willing and able to pay for it. And I can't increase from 42 billion to 63 billion, yeah? Because then eventually the grid fees will become too expensive. Then your TCO also doesn't work anymore. If the trucks and the grid talk to each other, this is a money-making opportunity for the trucks. Because by providing flexibility, they might get very cheap energy. Because flexibility will be valuable. So it might be even a good business case for a truck operator to say, okay, I lose a quarter of an hour, but I provide flexibility. This flexibility gets me, you know, brings me more money that I could earn by driving a quarter of an hour earlier or faster.
We will have, and we are working on that, various charging situations. I would say the most common will certainly be, and that would be a complete different highway charging. But then we need far more chargers. When you look at a normal truck stop, you see 50, 60 truckers just sitting there and taking their 8-9 hour break. In my future vision, we would have at every single one of those parking spots a charger. It does not need to be a megawatt charger. It could be 300 kilowatt or so. And then your grid decides. Yeah, the trucker punches in, I want to leave at 4 p.m. today, and I need it not necessarily even fully. You can even punch it in and say, I need it only 70% because I only have to go so many kilometers. And then the grid can decide at what point of time. However, you will have 60 chargers with 60 trucks which sit there for 9 hours and can't move in that time. Would that be a business case for you?
To say first from a grid standpoint, yeah, 60 times 0.3, it's 15 megawatt, or 15 times 1 megawatt. For me, it's the same.
I would say no, because those trucks sitting for 9 hours there, they need the 15 megawatt over 9 hours, while the others need the 15 megawatts of over 45 minutes.
Okay, you have a point. Then it's a business case, because this provides more flexibility. So I need the 15 megawatts, a peak, So from a peak standpoint, it's the same, but for the same connection capacity, I get more flexibility. So that's an interesting thought, that maybe 60 times 300 kilowatt is better than 15 times 1 megawatt, because it gives you more flexibility. On the other side, that means, however, that a fast charging within 45 minutes wouldn't work. So some megawatt charger probably you would still want to have. So it's probably a mix between 1 megawatt chargers and 300 kV chargers.
And a lot of those 300 kV chargers would be, let's say, inefficiently used, because a trucker, let's say, his 600 kilowatt over 9 hours, and he can't move during that time.
No, actually, that's my third point, because I said you have to have the depots, you have to have the connection, you have to the flexibility built into the system. The third one is we need to build the networks, you know, the non-exclusive networks. Positive, we are seeing customer interest picking up. So we have built a few stations also together. We are building some together with Mercedes. We are building some with other competitors of yours. But now we are seeing also truck charging stations coming up. We have inaugurated now two, one in Scandinavia and one in other place. But now we see other customers really signing up to say, let's build a series of such truck charging stations strategically positioned across Europe. I'm actually optimistic. I've seen that my dear Spanish competitors are building up, you know, along the coast in northern Spain, some corridors, I would say, where you have truck charging opportunities, more for light trucks, I would, however, say. But so there is momentum now, which I have not observed 2 years ago. So I can really see that the momentum is picking up. But on the other side, as you said, 2030 is around the corner and we need to pick up.
I liked it when I read some of your quotes recently, when you compared electric energy grid with a highway. Yeah, but what are we doing in Germany normally? We build a two-lane highway. Traffic gets bigger and bigger and bigger, more traffic jams. And when it's unbearable, we come to the decision, oh, now let's expand to three lane. Then we go through 3 years of huge difficulties with a lot of traffic jams. And then after 3 years, the three-lane highway runs until we realize that it fills up pretty fast. Are you now planning already the three-lane highway and building the three-lane highway? Or are you building at the moment the one-lane road, well knowing that pretty soon it's jammed? Are you building ahead of demand or are you building behind demand?
I would say we try to build ahead of demand, but one has to say probably not sufficiently. And one has to explain, in the past, actually, we were not allowed to make what we call anticipatory investments. So if I wanted to invest, I needed to show that there was an energy-related necessity, energiewirtschaftliche Notwendigkeit. Yeah? And that just meant I don't get a permit based on the assumption that somebody will connect in an area. I need a connection request in an area to be actually allowed to build.
Okay, but that was passed.
That was passed, but it's now only changing now. And I'm just saying that. So it's really a shift in the paradigm, how we plan and build systems. We now try to do the what we call anticipatory investment. We assume that in a certain area, there will be so much wind and so much truck charging. And therefore, we assume that based on this, we will need so much high voltage lines. Yeah? And if we do that, then we are thinking ahead of the three or four lanes. Right now, we are a little bit in the situation that you just described. We have filled up our system. We actually had a pretty good two-lane highway system for power across Germany. It's actually a very good power system, but it's completely full. All roads are full. And now we are building construction sites on full roads, which is really challenging us. But so we are moving into that one on a European level. That has been one of the discussions in the context of the electricity market design and also in the grid action plan that the EU Commission has now published last year. One of the points is that they want to allow for anticipatory investments, so building ahead of the curve. So we're trying to do that, but right now we are behind the curve. And so we still need to get to the point that we are building in front of the wave. And so the answer to you saying we are trying, but we are not there yet.
For the sake of time, there's so much else we can talk. And I think it's really exciting, but it is the number one topic, I would say, for a lot of industries. And you're right in the middle of it. From my side, four rapid fire questions. First of all, what is the biggest problem? Money, time, resources, or regulation?
Infrastructure. Because infrastructure needs money, time, permits, and regulation. Need all four. So infrastructure is really the bottleneck.
Secondly, what can we as the trucking industry do to make your life easier?
I think the more we talk and try to solve the problems together, the better it is. We made good progress from getting to finger point, you are the problem, I am the problem, whatever, to let's solve this together.
I would say that grew over time on our side. Similarly, it's a multiplication. If one side is zero, both sides are zero. And both have to invest in advance. On the one side, motivated by we want to decarbonize the world. On the other side, we want to have great products in 2030 to sell. Third one, we had a very German-centric talk. We are both leading companies in our country. But it's actually a European problem. Where would you rank our country, Germany, with other European countries in that? Ahead of the curve, behind the curve, more difficult, easier? And who is, in your opinion, leading in Europe in this case?
I would say the German system is very strong, but we need to become much more pragmatic in Germany. Germany, regulation-wise, is actually pretty good, and also infrastructure-wise. I'm in 11 European member states, and you feel now I'm struggling to say one is perfect and the others are stupid. No, I think they all have their issues. I wouldn't point out. So Germany is just as bad or good as the others.
Okay, that means the same challenge we face here in Germany, we face in any other country. If we can solve it here, we can solve it in any other country.
That's the positive way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's good. Last one, and this would be an entire extra podcast, but I focused on electricity with you. I talk a lot about hydrogen with others. What's your bet? Will we have hydrogen in 2030 on our roads here in Germany?
On the roads, I don't know. That you can answer better than I can. But hydrogen needs to be part of the energy system, because otherwise we would need to really deindustrialize at scale. However, I do not see that we reach the 2030 hydrogen target set by the EU Commission or the German government. They seem far too high from everything I observe right now.
Far too high in a sense that we don't have the production capacity, or is the distribution infrastructure lacking?
No, actually, I don't think the demand will be there, and that there will be not enough projects with people willing to commit to buy hydrogen at the prices which we will probably have at scale. We are talking about 10 million tons, whatever. I do not see that we will have that capacity in place, because final investment decisions will not be taken. I cannot see demand being there in that order of magnitude. We right now see a clear delay in hydrogen projects and a push kind of like towards later years.
And that would be really worth an entire extra podcast, because for me, hydrogen is a classical hen egg problem. If you would have hydrogen, I would produce the trucks and we would have the demands. I have a couple of really large customers who would say, I buy from you 2,000-3,000 hydrogen powered trucks, but you have to provide me a 5-year guarantee for the price of hydrogen and the supply of hydrogen. I don't want to run in the natural gas trap that it's cheap at the moment and suddenly it explodes and I'm then stuck with my trucks.
Yeah, I can see that. But sincerely, be clear, I'm a distribution operator. I'm not an upstream guy, so I don't produce electricity. I don't produce hydrogen myself. Yeah, so I'm really the distributor. But I agree with you, it's a chicken and egg problem. But as I said, it needs to be part of the equation. Whether it's part of the transport equation, you can answer better than I can. But I can tell you right now, I'm seeing delays. I just don't see the volumes that are set as targets. I mean, this is just an observation.
We had the rapid fire questions. We finished them. Leonard, it was so exciting talking with you. And given the topics we only scratched or didn't even address, I think we could have easily gone more. But there is more. If listeners are interested, there is the Daimler Truck podcast, a lot about transformation, but there is as well on E.ON a podcast in German. It's called Jetzt machen, der Energiewende podcast von E.ON. Very interesting too. And I think whoever is interested here should really get as many sources as possible, because all those puzzle pieces go together. But Leonard, thank you for your time. Thank you for being with us.
It was a pleasure, Martin. Thank you.
That was Transportation Matters, the CEO podcast of Daimler Trucks and Buses. If you enjoyed what you've heard, share this episode and subscribe to Transportation Matters on your preferred podcast platform. You can do this by tapping the follow or subscribe button right next to the podcast title.